We love artists, musicians, poets, and writers, those with day jobs, and of course the all-nighters. Listening's a big part of having a fun day, and remember to get someone good next Monday. Oh, April Fool's Day, one of my favorites. Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody, where everyone's welcome. And this week, what a melting pot of talent we have just for you. Take Three is a trio of musicians well known for a repertoire that fits everyone. They'll be in Chippewa Falls next week, and we'll chat with a couple members. Next week, we'll also include an opening night at UW Stout for an original comedy written by Steve Martin. Jim Oliver has that story, plus all that's happening on stages across West Wisconsin. The Chippewa Valley Museum has a busy year ahead, and about a year from now will open an exhibit that authenticates the musical heritage of this Wisconsin Valley. We'll talk with the museum director and the specialist coming to do the field work. We have an update on April 18th, Scrabble Bee, a fundraiser for the essential entity, Literacy Chippewa Valley. And what do you say we begin with this? Just about a month ago, we had artist Eric Lee as a guest. He had an exciting story to tell about being invited to exhibit at one of the most prestigious art events in all of Europe. His work deserved the recognition, but his experience dealing with such recognition was incomplete. How does one finance the entry and the shipping? And forget about traveling to Italy as a proud participant. That was dessert he just could not hope to enjoy. Not, anyway, until his friends, fellow artists, and admirers of his work showed the will that we all know often finds a way. I've always thought the best stories, especially those with heartbreaking chapters, the best ones have happy endings. Well, the dust has settled. Back in February, you and I talked about your prestigious and fortuitous invitation. I'm happy and proud to report that sometimes what people hear on Spectrum West has a real impact. First of all, Eric, just quickly refresh us on the invitation itself.
Well, sure. I got an invitation around Thanksgiving time to participate in a show that runs alongside the Venice Biennale for spring of 2019. I spent the next month or so trying to figure out if it was true or not, basically.
Yeah.
And once I found that out, that it is true, then it was sort of a matter of somehow coming up with the funds. And frankly, I didn't think I'd be able to do it, and I thought it'd be good enough just to be invited.
So back to what people hear on Spectrum West. Tell us about the results.
Yeah. Well, thanks to you, and thanks to the people you talked with, Joelle and Burke. People on my behalf started a GoFundMe page. That's something I never even thought of. That's how good at this stuff I am. And I could not believe it. Within 8 days, I met the goal. And in 9 days, it was exceeding. And I thought, well, we'll close the page because I can conscience keep this. You know, it's so much money. And I just couldn't believe it.
That's wonderful. All right. People made it possible. Tell us your plans.
Well, right now, I'm in the middle of trying to sort out. You know, I'm shipping, you know, as of today or tomorrow. I'm in the middle of trying to sort out how to do all that. It's really all new to me. You know, international stuff it can be complicated. Well, for me it is anyway. And so I'm doing that right now. I couldn't find my old visa, so I have a new one in the works. And I'm hoping to go. I'm hoping to be there for opening night. They have two nights for the big parties, I guess you could say, the ceremonies and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be, I think, the 9th and 10th, I think, of May.
Okay.
Yeah, I cut it kind of close, but it looks like everything's on course, so.
Good for you. I guess at the very least, you're going to have to send us some pictures, you know, and at the very most, maybe it's possible that we could even talk to you while you're there.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool? Yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I want to hear people in the background going, ah, da ba da da ba da da ba da.
Actually, I'm wondering if I'll be able to understand anybody because, you know, there's going to be the opening night, and they speak English, I know, but
sure.
I think mostly it'll probably be in Italian is my guess. But
they have wonderful accents, and I also want to hear about the food that you are able to ingest.
I'll let you know. I mean, like I say, this is all, still can't really quite believe it, so.
Well, congratulations on both counts, on the invitation and the inspiration you provided to so many of us. I mean, honors like this don't happen unless one is worthy. Let's just let that statement stand on its own.
I just want to say thank you to everybody now that I have the chance. So a very, very sincere thank you to everybody.
Eric, thanks for taking time with us. And ciao.
Ciao. Yeah, that's it. Yep.
Ciao, baby.
Right.
So thanks to all who responded exactly how I thought you might. You know, the people this program represents really are something special. Later on, Spectrum West, the music and story of Take Three, a museum tackles music history and more. This is the 18th year of literacy, Chippewa Valley's Scrabble Bee, a fun evening, and if you slap on D on fun, it becomes a fund evening. Yes, fund. It raises necessary financial support for this vital service. Liz Hart is director. She was on a road trip earlier this week, but nice enough to take time out to chat, beginning with where the Scrabble Bee idea originated.
This was originally an idea that came down from Pro Literacy, which is the national group that we belong to. And we just ran with it. And as you mentioned, this is our 18th year. So we've done a lot with it. And I think it works well for our organization just because it's a fun theme.
That's great. There may be people in the audience who are unfamiliar with Literacy Chippewa Valley. Give us a thumbnail.
Literacy Chippewa Valley is a nonprofit organization in Eau Claire since 1986. We provide adult basic education for those in need. It's all free of charge. We can provide one-to-one tutor relationships for people. We do a bulk of our work in the county jail, and we also have an English language learning class on site.
It's vital stuff, and congratulations on the work that you guys do. Now, back to the Scrabble Bee. Thursday, April 18th is the date. It's at the Pablo Center, yes?
Yes, this is a new location for us. It's in the Jamp Theater at the Pablo Center. Registration's about 5:30, and the games start at 6. So we're still looking for teams. There's still some tables that need to be filled. And so if people are interested, they should just go to our website and sign up. It's a lot of fun.
What is the configuration of a team? Is there a certain number of people, or can you have as many as you want? What's a team look like?
A team is 5 or 6 people. You will all play together. You can either be in the tortoise version or the hare version. The tortoise version is just like regular Scrabble that you play with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
The hare version is faster. All of you work together to lay down the highest point value words possible mm-hmm. in a short amount of time. There are 3 rounds, and each round is shorter than the previous one, and they also take away tiles. I think it helps if you practice a little bit beforehand just so that you can get in mind some of those high point value words, like quixotic.
yeah, there you go. Not only do teams help Literacy Chippewa Valley by participating in Scrabble Bee, but they can also raise donations prior to the event. You encourage that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we give prizes to those who are the biggest fundraisers. So you get your family and friends and colleagues to support you and bring that pledge money in before you even come. Then you can also buy back tiles for $150. There's a raffle, a 50-50 raffle, but also a basket raffle and a silent auction. So for Literacy Chippewa Valley, there's lots of opportunities for us and for you to win prizes if you become the highest pledge donor.
That is one prize that a team can win. There are others. You can win for best costumes.
That's a lot of fun. The teams all dress up as a themed costume, and that's really fun to see.
Most points scored is obvious.
And, of course, the losers get a little prize.
Just for participating. Good for you.
Yeah, but mainly people try to win.
Yeah. Isn't that what life is all about?
Yeah.
Say, anything else you still need? Do you still need word waiters? Do you still need raffle baskets? What's still out there?
We do, as a matter of fact. We're looking for word waiters. Those are basically scorekeepers. Every table has its own individual scorekeeper because things get going fairly quickly and it's kind of fast and furious, and so someone has to keep track of the words and the scores. So if you're interested in becoming a word waiter, you can go on our website, and there's some sign-up sheets, and give us a call or an email, and we'll get you going. You have to go through a training to do that. It's just a 1 hour, so we explain how we keep the score. And, yes, we're also looking for organizations to donate a basket or a silent auction item, even just a smaller item, because then what we do is we combine items and put them into a basket. Our board has a committee that does that, and they do a wonderful job. And I think we have over 60 businesses donating items. What we do with the baskets is we have a raffle for them, so you can win some good things in those baskets.
Worthy cause, Literacy Chippewa Valley, fun night, 18th annual Scrabble Bee, Thursday, April 18th, 6 p.m., Pablo Center. What's the website, Liz?
It's our new website, www.literacychippewavalley.org.
Well, thanks so much, and enjoy your vacation.
Thanks, Al.
Take it easy.
Have a good afternoon.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory, presenting March Hammer Madness Annual Wood and Metal Show with Tin Cat Studio, and featuring Brian Hall, Joyce Halverson, and Wendy Frank. ArtZGallery.org. Not too many days left for that exhibit. You know, music is on the minds and in the minds and the hands of so many people in the Valley of the Chippewa. It's where we came from, who we are, and where we're going. It's fitting, then, that one of our museums would choose to document the music we've made. Carrie Ronander directs the Chippewa Valley Museum. We've talked about the initiative called Sounds of Eau Claire in the past. It's morphed into Music Identities, and an eventual exhibit will be named Sounds Like Home. Joseph O'Connell, a folklorist and media specialist from North Carolina, is due to arrive soon to put his touches on the process, so we invited both Carrie and Joe to fill us in. Carrie, your project is called Music Identities. First, tell us about the grant that is making forward motion on this project possible.
Right. The grant is from the National Endowment for the Arts. We received $20,000 to launch kind of a three-year project, actually. This is the first step, laying a foundation for a lot of work at the museum focused around music and music history and culture. It's actually our second attempt at this particular program. The first one, we didn't quite make it, but the second one, we were successful. It started January 1st. Our folklorist began working on the project.
That old adage about trying again.
You should try three times before giving up on a proposal.
Well, no, you don't have to. Second one worked. We have spoken about the Sounds of Eau Claire project here on Spectrum West a few times. Was this chain of events always in place, or did one thing just kind of lead to another?
They kind of grew up, or kind of co-grew up. The Sounds of Eau Claire project began in 2016, and the idea of doing a musical identities project really kind of started about the same time. Mm-hmm. So our first application was in 2017, mm-hmm. right after Sounds of Eau Claire had launched for an oral history project. And the second time was a year into the Sounds of Eau Claire oral history project.
How long has music, the heritage of which has now become worthy of a special exhibit and attention, how long has that been on the radar?
As an exhibit, probably been thinking about it for a few years as kind of a special focus of what we do with the museum. It's something we've been working on for a few decades. Okay. We have a long history of working with folk artists and folklorists and trying to make sure that that part of our culture in the Chippewa Valley is documented.
And the folklorist who is working on this particular project is a guy named Joseph O'Connell. He has said we can call him Joe, so we will. Joe, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you live and work in North Carolina. You're a musician, so you know of what you speak. Tell us about the process that acquaints you with and brings you to an appreciation and a respect for the musical heritage of a community that's halfway across the country.
Well, it's not entirely an accident. I am a Midwesterner historically. I grew up in Indiana and have spent most of my life, actually, in that state. I worked with a cultural program at Indiana University called Traditional Arts Indiana for several years. Also made a few trips northwest to Wisconsin during that period. So I have been acquainted with the state and have met a lot of really great people in your state who do one form of culture work or another and have always really admired Wisconsin. There's a really strong cohort of people who are excited about supporting local culture around the state mm-hmm. and who are doing amazing work to learn about and to foster some of the vernacular artists who are maybe not always in the urban centers of the state. So I've worked in Wisconsin before and enjoy connecting with people in that area.
So, Carrie, how did you find this guy?
Part of the work you've done in the last couple of decades is with James Leary, a folklorist out of UW-Madison. So I talked to Jim about doing some work with the Chippewa Valley Museum again, and Jim said, I'm retired. Field work, that's too much for me, but I do have some recommendations, and Joe was at the top of the list.
So, Joe, you're coming to Wisconsin in April, just a matter of days. How do you document what you learn? Tell us just a little bit about your process of documentation.
Well, the first part of that is really the process of getting in touch with people, because obviously you can't record interviews if you don't already have in mind who you want to be talking to. And that's a lot of what I've been doing over the past few weeks, just kind of having general conversations with people who are in the Chippewa Valley and people who are musicians or maybe they study music, really getting a broad sense of what's going on in the region and trying to brainstorm with people collaboratively about what this project might focus on. And so by the time that I'm actually in the area in person, I will have a pretty good idea of who I want to be talking to and who might be good to interview for the documentation that's going to be the basis of the exhibit. I'll be setting up visits with artists and I'll be doing sound recorded interviews. We'd really like to have some music performance recordings come out of this, and I'll be taking photos. So it'll be a lot of audio recording and also a lot of photo documentation.
Wow. Sounds like you'll have a busy visit. Hope you have time to have a little fun, too. Yeah, I bet you what you do is fun.
It's really fun, and I decided I was going to bring my melodica in case there's time to jam with anybody.
All right. That's the voice of Joseph O'Connell. He's a folklorist and a media producer. He's the guy who's coming to do a lot of the documentation for an exhibit that will open in the spring of 2020 called Sounds Like Home at the Chippewa Valley Museum, the director of which is in the studio with us. Carrie Ronander is here. Joe, from what you know already about this part of Wisconsin, is there an exceptional quality to this heritage of ours, past and present, or is this kind of fairly typical wherever one might land a dart on a map?
Yeah, I would say that there's even maybe more than one exceptional heritage in the Chippewa Valley from what people are telling me. And kind of how you look at that depends on who you are and what your background is and what your passions are musically and culturally. I think the world has learned a lot about Eau Claire as a music hub over the past few years related to a lot of the indie rock music that's kind of percolated up in the city. That's one way that people have started to talk about the Chippewa Valley music heritage. And I think what Carrie and I both are really excited about doing with this project is sort of expanding on that and building on it and talking about what are some of the other kinds of heritage and the other ways in which this can be seen as an exceptional place in terms of its music heritage. And, you know, I think we'll be talking about other genres like polka, Hmong traditional music. We'll be talking about Ojibwa and other native powwow musicians. And so there's a lot of different ways to look at what makes this place special as a musical place. We're going to be looking broadly and help, you know, talking to a lot of different people so that they can kind of communicate to us what makes it special for them.
Carrie, I understand that, as I said earlier, the opening of your exhibit, Sounds Like Home, is about a year away. What's going to happen relative to this all between now and then, other than what Joe's telling us is going to go on in his life?
Well, we're going to take the work that Joe will be gathering, reviewing that, looking at the collections that we have at the museum dating back to the 1980s, even looking at material that was gathered from the Sounds of Eau Claire Oral History Project and the History Harvest materials, taking all of that together and beginning to cull and weed and come up with themes that we can then put into an exhibit for next spring. So coming up with design ideas, and part of that exhibit are listening stations. So we can take different examples of the music that Joe is collecting, but other music as well, so people can just hear the different strains of culture that we have here.
Have you already started working on or imagining the visuals that'll be accompanying this exhibit, or is it too early for that?
It's a little too early. We really kind of have to see what we have before we can begin to shape the exhibit.
Okay. Now, is Joe's work all cut out for him already, or can anyone provide 11th hour information prior to him hitting town? On the Sounds of Eau Claire, the segments that we had previously, you know, we were letting people know that they could come forward at any time. Has that possibility, that potential ended, or someone says, gee whiz, this is the first I've heard about it, can I contribute?
I think we're always open to contributions. I know that Joe has his work cut out for him when he's here on site for the next 2 weeks, but I don't think he has every minute planned. Is that correct?
That's correct. I am still gathering information, and I'm definitely still learning, and that's part of the way this process works usually. I think that, you know, when I've completed my interviews and recordings, part of the information that I'm going to be handing over to Carrie is going to be not just the material that I was able to create, not just interviews that I was able to do, but any other information that I was able to learn. So there's always room to learn more.
It's a really neat and an interesting and fascinating process. So, Carrie, let's go off on a tangent. While we wait for all of this stuff to happen in the next year or so, you have a voice here. Tell people what else is going on that they should know about. Summer's coming up. That's an exciting time.
Oh, sure. It's busy. We are on the cusp of a very busy exhibit season. Mm-hmm. Over the next year, we're going to have 4 different exhibits opening and closing at the Chippewa Valley Museum.
Wow.
Starting with right about the time Joe comes, in a week, we'll have the exhibit Spirited: Prohibition in America. It's a traveling exhibit that will be on site for 7 weeks. That closes, and about a month later, we're going to open Racing in the Chippewa Valley, which is going to be curated by 2 guest curators and only look at motorsports.
Hmm.
That's going to be available over the summer. And then another traveling exhibit will open in the fall for 7 weeks called Power of Children, about Anne Frank and Ruby Bridges and Ryan White. When that leaves, that's when we're going to start setting up for Sounds Like Home. Lots of comings and goings, and different kinds of history and culture will be at the Chippewa Valley Museum over the next year.
Yeah, museums, to a lot of visitors, just seem like quiet places, like libraries and things. But if people only knew, and this is what people are finding out through programs like this, what goes on behind the scenes, it wouldn't seem so reserved.
No, we want the museum to be a part of our mission is to connect community, to connect people to the community through the museum. And so to do that, you need to show all the different kinds and make available all the different kinds of activity that makes up the Chippewa Valley. In the summer, we have kids programs. And so that's always quite lively.
Good.
When you have a class of kids in the museum.
Yeah. And museums should be lively.
I think so.
I'm thinking back on my history of times that I had visited museums, small and large, and it was always as if you were in something that was just so powerful. You didn't go running around going, oh, look at that, look at that, look at that.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of museum culture that you want to have respect for the place.
Sure. Maybe that's the word I should have used, respect. So I'm happy to report that I've always had respect for museums, ladies and gentlemen. Carrie Ronander from the Chippewa Valley Museum, thank you for being with us. Joe O'Connell, folklorist, who's on his way soon to the Chippewa Valley to archive and document things to help Sounds Like Home, the exhibit about music, become a reality. Thank you both for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Al.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yes, it's always good to have a close relationship with your museum. You can do that in a couple ways. through the door with someone special or the kids, and the grandkids, and online at cvmuseum.com. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, the weather is warming. Schedules of West Wisconsin theater companies are doing the same. Here's Jim Oliver.
Thank you, sir. Chippewa Falls, 1869, the musical, a dinner theater production with words and music by Jerry Way, will be presented today if you're listening on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. The production will also be presented Sunday without a meal. The show is being directed by Jerry and Carol Way. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present Disney's Aladdin April 5th and 6th and the 12th and the 13th in the Oxford Theater. The Charitable Sisterhood of the Second Trinity Victory Church will continue Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays through April 7th in the main theater of the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. NSTC Teens on Stage will present The Curious Savage Friday through Sunday and the following Friday through Sunday at the Northern Star Theater in Rice Lake. The Clear Lake Community Theater will present Meredith Wilson's The Music Man at the Clear Lake Area Community Center on Friday through Sunday and April 5th, 6th, and 7th. Dearly Departed will be staged by the Wide Spot Players Friday, April 5th, in the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm. The St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson will present Honky Tonk Laundry Fridays and Saturdays through May 18th. Raggedy Ann and Andy will be presented by the Barron Spotlighters April 5th, 6th, and 7th, and the 12th to the 14th at the Barron Area Community Center. And the St. Croix Art Barn in Osceola has announced auditions for its 2019 season for 5 p.m. April 15th, 16th, and 17th in the Art Barn. The season, which runs from June through October, includes A Midsummer Night's Dream, The Little Mermaid, Ole and Lena's Wedding, Blythe Spirit, and the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Thank you, sir. It's the Polytechnic University with a big splash of artistic talent for fun and an educational ingredient for some. We're talking UW Stout, and the guy doing the talking and the listening, he's back again, Jim Oliver.
Picasso at the Le Pan Agile was the first full-length play written by Steve Martin. It opened in Chicago and Los Angeles in 1993 and then made it to New York. It was the winner of the 1996 Outer Critics Circle Award for Best Off-Broadway Play. A reviewer in the New York Times said, "It's important to remember that the playwright of Picasso at the Le Pan Agile is Steve Martin. He's a stand-up comic, actor, writer, banjo player, and something of a genius in his own right. So when big questions are being addressed, you can be sure that a layer of silliness is always in place, and subversively a layer of seriousness beneath that." The University of Wisconsin Stout Theater will present the comedy on April 5th and 6th, and the 11th through the 13th in the Harvey Hall Theater at the University. Joining us by telephone to talk about the show is Professor Paul Kallenberg, Chair of the Department of Communication Studies, Global Languages, and Performing Arts at UW Stout. And, oh yeah, he's the director of the play. Welcome to Spectrum West. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us about this show.
Thank you.
Why don't you just start off by telling us about the play?
Sure. The play is set in Paris in 1904 at a bar called La Pan Agile, which is actually a bar in Paris and still exists. It's a bar where intellectuals and artists would go and gather and exchange their ideas and views of the world and the universe, so to speak. So it centers around Picasso, of course, and Einstein. And there is a chance meeting between these two at the bar. And they go on to have a discussion about the role of science and the role of art in the world. And we find out how much they have in common and how much they both rely on each other and the creative process. Within all that, there's a delightful number of characters that inhabit the bar, witty conversations, delightful puns, and a very nice comedic sense to the piece, and we have a time traveler come at the end of the play from the future who wears blue suede shoes and sings songs about not being lonesome tonight.
Okay, well, the New York Times reviewer talks about a layer of seriousness. Is that something they made up, or is that actually happening?
No, there's definitely some seriousness. I would maybe use the word poignant instead of serious.
Uh-huh.
I think there's some beautiful metaphors in the play, some beautiful analogies of bringing together the arts and science and just life in general in terms of a celebration of it all and looking to the future for ideas and for hope.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at the number of members of the cast. According to the Samuel French description of the show, there are 9 male and 2 female characters. Is that solid with what your production has?
Yeah, we've expanded the cast to 3 females. In the original, one female played all the female roles because they're not all on stage at the same time. But I wanted to open up the cast to more student participation. So we expanded that to 3 females.
Uh-huh. What led you to pick a Steve Martin show for the spring production?
Well, I've always loved this play, and it's so witty, it's so delightful, it's so well written. And I thought it would be something that the actors in our program would be able to really embrace and go with, because it's such an ensemble piece, because they're basically all on stage almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's your friendly corner bar. Everybody knows each other, or you start to make friends, and, you know, the bar is, you know, a metaphor for the way that we live in terms of our interactions with other people. So it's a delightful piece, and the actors have really embraced their roles and really have worn them well.
We are talking to Paul Kallenberg, who is director of Picasso at the Le Pan Agile production at UW-Stout Theater. How are you staging the show? Is it just in the bar, or does it move around a little bit?
No, it stays in the bar the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It very much resembles, well, I was using the comparison to the situation comedy Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those type of characters, that familiarity, it becomes their home away from home. So it's a single set. It's a beautiful set. Jennifer Sandsaken, scenic designer and lighting designer, has done a wonderful job in recreating a warm atmosphere of the bar. So it's very homey, very comfortable, and works very well to embrace the entire show and the themes of the show.
Oh, the costumes are great, too.
It's a period piece, 1904. Barb Weisenberger, our costume designer, has done a wonderful job in recreating that period and capturing the sense of characters in each of the costumes.
We've talked in the past about the relationship between a technical education at UW-Stout and theatrical productions. You've always been very articulate in explaining what the relationship is.
Well, it's explained in the play.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons I also picked it, because it shows the balance that is needed in terms of our thought processes, in terms of our education, in terms of our society at whole, is that balance between the arts and the sciences.
Mm-hmm.
One doesn't exist without the other. We coexist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we work at Stout. We do have a minor in performing arts, and although we don't have a theater major, we get students across the board from many majors who have participated in theater in high school or at the community level and have a high level of talent. So we bring them from these different disciplines. A lot of them find that the theater program is kind of their home away from home. It gets them away from their major and have trials and tribulations of being a college student and gets them to perform and create and continue their theater experiences.
Mm-hmm. How many students do you have actually involved in the technical side of the show?
Oh, I would say probably about 20 students or so
The
show.
What do you have them doing?
Well, we have quite a few who help build the set in our theater practicum class and students working down in the costume shop as well. And then working the show, we have, you know, 3 stage managers. We'll have a soundboard operator, people running with flies. So it takes a lot of people and a lot of students.
Mm-hmm.
And Sometimes it's a lot of work to find everybody, but we get there.
Ah, well, that sounds great. Well, I'm sure they all have a good time together. So that's what theater's
about. This cast especially is really having a good time together. They've really formed a unit, very cohesive, and they're very, very hardworking.
Well, the play is Picasso at the Le Pan Agile. The University of Wisconsin Stout will present the play April 5th and 6th and the 11th and the 13th in the Harvey Hall Theater at the University in Menominee. For ticket information, well, I just use my favorite internet search engine and look for UW Stout Ticketing. There are probably more sophisticated ways of doing it. But anyway, we've been talking to the director of the play, Professor Paul Kahlenberg, director of theater at Stout. Professor, thanks so much for coming on and talk to us and for picking great shows for the people to see.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. As usual, Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. This is the weekend of the spring concerts from the Red Cedar Symphony. We talked about them last week's show. Dancing Around the World, guest conductor Ivar Lundy Jr. Saturday in Cumberland, Sunday in Rice Lake, redcedarsymphony.org. Is that website. Readers are being sought for the 13th Annual International Poetry Reading at UW-Eau Claire. It's coming up Wednesday, April 24th. Those who can speak and read in a language other than English are invited to read a poem of their choosing. 25 languages are represented. Information via email, internationalpoetryreading@gmail.com. Take Three is a trio, beginning as three young and very talented women playing violin, cello, and piano. At times, the pianist changes to facilitate busy solo schedules. And come next Thursday at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, it'll be Lila Yang on cello, Lindsay Deutsch playing violin, and at the piano, Christopher O'Reilly. All rooted in classical, but on stage they physically engage in contemporary arrangements. I spoke with Lindsay Deutsch, who also travels as solo violinist, with Yanni, the popular New Age instrumentalist, and Mr. O'Reilly, former host of From the Top on NPR, a sought-after pianist for live performances, collaborations, and recording sessions worldwide. Lila was off doing something else, but as Meatloaf so aptly once put it, two out of three ain't bad. Take us back to the beginning of Take Three. How did you all get together?
We all graduated conservatory at around the same time, and we have a love for classical music. We all grew up playing classical music from the time we were small kids, had dreams of making a career in the field. And we went to conservatory, which is a place very much where you live in a vacuum and you all kind of think you're going to perform, and you have dreams of traveling the world and paying rent and eating well, and it just seems so fancy. And the day after graduation, we realized we had a big problem and that the real world doesn't work that way. And so as artists, we had to figure out how we were going to respect all of those thousands of hours of classical music training, but also make a living. And so we came up with the idea that we wanted to have a performing arts career where you could literally go to any town, anywhere, and pick up a random person crossing the street and have them listen to 5 minutes of our show, and they would be entertained. And so what we have is a blend of classical crossover, and it seems to be working so far. There's some comedy in there. There's talking. It's kind of a variety show now, and we're having a blast.
So was piano, violin, and cello the preferred trio configuration, and you sought to find the right people, or did the personnel and their relationships dictate the arrangement?
You know, over the years, I've tried different combinations, and I find that you really need piano to fill out the sound. I mean, we can't take 10 people, right? So piano really fills out, makes it really full. And I personally just love a good bass sound. I think that that really drives music really well. And then, of course, I wanted violin because I play the violin, so it had to have that. But piano trios have been playing classical music since the beginning. And so that's a very standard configuration. And it works quite well for this more pop as uh-huh. well.
So as a young musical Lindsay growing up, did you sense that you might be restless and not settle for sitting in a violin section at four concerts a year in a civic orchestra? Did you know you would eventually have to jump out of your chair and your perfect playing posture to move like Jagger in order to have fun?
You know what? I think young Lindsay dreamt of that solo, dreamt of that spotlight. And, you know, there have been so many ups and downs in this artistic career that I think any artist, whether an actor or a comedian or whatever, that we all go through these ups and downs and trying to figure out how to remain relevant. But honestly, this pop side didn't come full force until the Yanni tour happened. I didn't really know that I'd have an act for it. It wasn't something that I was ever interested in as a child. I really thought my skills were of the classical nature, and I was really wrong. I was so wrong because my skills actually are much better spent in this crossover pop realm.
All right. I know you rotate piano players due to scheduling conflicts. I'm guessing from most of the photos I've seen that Irene Kim is the original and each keyboardist brings his or her own flair to the show. Now, the folks in the Heidi Center audience are going to get a treat in that Christopher O'Reilly, who is, from what I hear, still recovering from St. Patrick's Day, is the pianist on this particular road trip, and most know him from the killer NPR show From the Top. It was a good job while it lasted. Christopher O'Reilly, welcome.
Thanks.
So tell me about what you're doing now, other than traveling with guys like Take Three.
Well, you know, Lindsay was actually on a little radio show that I did when she was a young violinist before she went to conservatory, and one of the things that we highlighted on that show was exactly the kind of musical engagement in the broadest sense that Lindsay is really championing. So it's really sort of living by the Duke Ellington adage, there are only two kinds of music, good music and the other kind, in which case it's really up to performers to perform what they believe in and not be, you know, hogtied by genre prejudice or some sort of sense of value judgment. It's really a matter of what we believe strongly in and put across to the audience as well as we can. And it's up to the audience to really take that performance and decide on the basis of their ears and hearts about what they think is good. And so that leaves the door open for all kinds of great stuff that we play.
I know you do a lot of traveling other than the Take Three tour that we're talking about, the current one, and you guest appear with a lot of symphonies. How does, I guess I'm looking for the right term, how does an independent musician, or if you are anchored somewhere or to someone, be sure to let us know that, how does an independent musician handle all of the requests for their services?
Got a manager, you know, so they take care of things like
yeah.
that for me. And most of all, I've been thrilled to make my way through the world as a performing musician. I've started getting a little bit more interested in teaching, and so my master classes, I like to think, are as exciting as my recitals. So I'm doing a little bit of everything, and so it's just a matter of juggling events and projects. I'm still doing lots of arranging of pop things for myself and for other groups. And so that keeps me busy as well.
We touched with Lindsay on the young Lindsay. How about the young Christopher? How did you get involved in the piano and how early?
It was an ultimatum, actually. My mother taught me how to read when I was 4 years old. And the nuns at St. Athanasius in Evanston, Illinois, said, well, he knows how to read already, so he's going to be bored and he's going to get into trouble, and we don't want any troublemakers. So you can have French lessons or piano lessons at $15 a week. And I remember my first lesson and seeing middle C on the blackboard and how that corresponded to the white key under the N of Steinway. And so as long as I'm playing on a Steinway, I'm all right.
Lindsay, a lot of what you do, and you alluded to it earlier, is contemporary. You cover and arrange a bunch of great music. How about originals? You guys write as well?
You know, I'm glad that you asked about that. Originals are tricky, and it's something that Take Three is really interested in getting to soon, especially when we talk about wanting to play with orchestra. That's kind of our next frontier, is soloing as a trio with orchestra. And it's really interesting time right now to play new music because licensing has become a hot topic issue, and there are a lot of fights going on now with publishers and arrangers. And personally, now that I want to play with the trio with orchestra, I have to figure out how that's possible with all of these licensing issues of already existing pieces. So the way around that is to then play original music. But the difficult thing is I find that it takes one or two or three listenings of a piece to fall in love. And so we would have to hire someone to do an original that took one listening to love. And I think that's easier said than done, but we're going to be doing that in the next couple of seasons. It's probably going to start as a trio with symphony orchestra piece. Mm-hmm. So keep watch on that.
I will. Now, some of the bios I read talk about music outreach. And while you're in Wisconsin, specifically Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, I believe you're going to be visiting schools. Last week on the show, I had Dale Henderson, who is the cellist out of New York, who started the Bach in the Subways thing a number of years ago and continues to play and inspire other people to play on Bach's birthday, of which it was his 334th last week. Talk a little bit about outreach and how important that is. Is it a giving back thing? Does it infuse energy when you need it? Talk about working with young people.
You know, I started in the public school system. So I was really lucky. I grew up in Houston, Texas, and I was in a public school that required a musical instrument be taken. And they put a violin in my hand, and I took to it and loved it. And, of course, have made that my career. But we have a bit of a conundrum in this country. Classical music really isn't growing. It's not doing fantastic. It's hard to get interest. And that's a problem for performers. And I also feel that classical music gave me so much as a kid, and it has given so much richness to my life in general. I think it's important that it continue, that tradition continue. And that starts with youngsters. I mean, if you hear this wonderful music as kids and it's exciting and it's presented in a way that catches their interest, they're going to either take up instruments themselves. They're certainly going to want to pay money to buy tickets to support it. And I think it's up to all musicians to make sure that we're doing our part to make sure that this tradition continues. And hopefully with Take Three presenting it in a way that I think kids will really enjoy, hopefully we're doing our small part to try to make sure that it does continue.
Christopher, you mentioned that you continue to teach. Anything else where you have contact with people who are the future of classical music?
Well, I still keep in touch with a few thousand of my guests over time, and been very, very happy to see them go and do all kinds of original and very personally motivated things. You know, as Lindsay mentioned, we have heretofore been, you know, musicians who hoped to fit into a particular career track that was probably established 100 years or so ago. And as she rightfully points out, that's not really what it's about anymore. And I think particularly when we're dealing with outreach and we're dealing with, you know, communicating to the audience in our concerts about what we care about, why we play the music we do, it's really more about music as generated by particular and integral and important and essential artists born of their own personal passions mm-hmm. and drives.
Christopher O'Reilly, he's playing the piano. Lindsay Deutsch is on the violin. And Lila Yang will be on cello, part of Take Three, appearing Heidi Center, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, Thursday, April 4th, 7:30 p.m. Christopher, Lindsay, thanks for being with us on Wisconsin Public Radio. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Looking forward to getting there. All right.
Thank you so much.
Sure doesn't sound like a trio, does it? A little bit of music from Game of Thrones, Take Three. Catch 'em when you can, and you can at the Heidi Center next week. The website there is cvca.net. Spectrum Memos for you. Saturday, April 6th, International Folk Fair, UWEC Davies Center, noon to 4 p.m. 20 cultures represented in food, displays, music, and lessons. At the Mabel Tainter in Menominee, Friday evening, Tycho Arts Midwest Daichi No Kai drummers. If I butchered that, I'm sorry. And on April 11th, that's a Thursday, the Everly Brothers Experience. MabelTainter.org is that website. The spring recital from the Menominee Art Music Society is Sunday, April 7th, 2 p.m. at United Methodist Church in Menominee, featuring classical music for piano, strings, woodwinds, voice, and percussion. Coming up next week, Menominee Jazz has a special show on the way. Special guest Kenny Holman on saxophone. He's going to be here, as will Jake Karkula of Menominee Jazz. Nicholas Phillips has a new piano CD with a special composing focus. We'll sample it and talk with Mr. Phillips as well. Thanks to Erica and Dean. Thank you for completing our audience. Remember, keep in touch on the Spectrum West Facebook page or with guest and topic suggestions via email. We're at spectrumwest@wpr.org. I'm Al Ross. For Jim Oliver, thank you. See you next week.